Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
We're back for another week. Did you guys miss us? No?
They're saying yes. Can you hear it? I can hear it.
I know, really, right? We'll hold for applause. How are you? I am sweating. If I had balls, I'd be sweating my balls off. It is so hot.
I'm actually sweating my balls off, and I don't have balls to sweat off.
It is so hot.
It's stupid. It is only June.
And I don't have AC, peoples. Just so you know, it is so hot for me. But I am cooling down with some ice. You know, I'm going to try a hack where you put ice behind a fan. Have you ever tried that hack?
Oh my God, I haven't, but I wish I knew about it when I lived in New York City all those years.
Oh, I heard someone talking about New York City. And for those of you who've never lived in New York City, New York heat in the apartment is either you're freezing or it's Mother Africa. Yeah. There's no in between.
Yeah, yeah. No, you are in Arctic or Africa. Pick the A continent and there you will be. Like, there's no winning. And then
there's
die on your way to the train and then you freeze your way to where you're going once you get in the train.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm complaining about something I no longer have to deal with, but here we are.
I am hot here. I mean, it's, thank God, I prefer hot over cold. That's just me, but.
Oh, same. Because you can dream of a pool or a beach. Right? You might not be there. Like, you might be like, I'm weeks away from there. But you can like eat ice cream and think about it. And that might come true. Because everyone has a pool. There is always a pool to find. I know, because I find them all. Because I love pools so much. There is a pool.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to become friends with people you don't like. That's, you know what?
I mean, isn't that the LA way?
You got to do what you got to do. Okay.
Also, this week, I wanted to remember we're reading some of the from the 5-star reviews that we've gotten on the in the Apple Store. So I just want to read a couple more this week. And guys, if you want to support the show, you can also do that by leaving us also your version of your 5-star review.
Yes.
5 stars. It really, really helps people find the show because we're trying to build our audience. And also, like, DM us, you know, do all that stuff too. But a 5-star review really goes a long way in helping the show. So I'm just going to read a couple more. So we have one here from G. Steinberg, and it's entitled, I love that they include trans women.
Oh, yeah.
This is such a wonderful discovery. They talk about all kinds of women, but the fact that they bring trans women to light specifically inspires me from 1550s. They were like that, our episode on 1550s.
I love her so much. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Like, inspires, I don't want to like play favorites, but like I do. And she's
we have a favorite. Inspires me to write this review, she goes on to say, I'm assuming, or they go on to say, because this is so important. The women are lots of fun and funny too. So listen to the whole thing, but especially this episode. Aw, thank you.
I'm trying to remember which episode that is.
I think it's one of our earlier ones.
It's one of our earlier ones. Go back.
Now we have so many.
I know.
Listen to all of them. You know what you can do, guys? Download all the episodes and then just go back and listen to them at your leisure.
Yeah. No pressure. Just do that.
No pressure.
Thank you.
And then another one from Gio Gabriel. The title is Love. Thank you. Oh. And Gio Gabriel goes on to say, love the banter between the two friends and the stories they tell about notorious women.
Yes.
And then we also have one here from Pilates Bridge 1234. So one of your folks.
Oh, one of my people.
Who says,
I wonder who.
Oh my God, so funny is the title. Oh, what'd you say?
I said, I wonder who. And I'm thinking.
Yeah. So Pilates Bridge 1234 says, oh my God, so funny is the title. And then it says, this podcast is so much fun. Seriously, these ladies have so much chemistry and I feel like I'm right there in the room with them. Kind of wish I was. I've learned a lot too, and I'm super looking forward to more. Keep them coming, please.
Ah,
yay. Oh, we wish you were here too. Thank you so much, Pilates Bridge 1234. And guys, again, if you want your review read on air, you can do that by going to the Apple Podcasts app store. I don't know, platform, apparatus, thingy, room, thingamajig, and leave us a 5-star review as well. And as we've done that, let's move on. Let's get started. I am first this week. And
okay, I had no idea.
I'm continuing the theme of Black Music Month.
I'm actually obsessed with this theme and I'm so excited.
It's a, I did not tell Miriam about my theme that I was doing this month. No, so she's just like, whatever, Lavetta.
Yeah. I feel like I figured it out after last week. I was like, wait, got it. Okay.
So my, hold on for just a second. I'm forever like adjusting this thing. Okay. So my Notorious Woman this month, to round out the month of June is, excuse me, hold on, is Celia Cruz.
Celia Cruz! I said Celia that wrong, Cruz. But I love, oh my God, I'm Celia. So excited.
Celia Cruz. Yes, this is so much fun, aka the Queen of Salsa.
Yeah.
I learned so much from this and oh my God, we've been so blessed. But anyway, let me get into it. There's a lot. She had an over 60-year career. She's an amazing woman. So let's get into it. Program note, because she's from Cuba, a lot of this stuff I will explain in the way that the West or Americans, I mean, Cuba's in the West, but Americans can kind of understand. But if there are any Spanish speakers out there, particularly people from Cuba or Cuba, please, if you want to write in and correct us if we got anything wrong, because I'm sure there might be some stuff I got wrong. But she is a queen. You guys are going to love her. She's amazing. So let's get into it. Okay.
Okay.
Celia Cruz was born Ursula Hilaria Celia de la Caridad Cruz Alfonso.
Love that for her.
I know. Amazing. Love that. On October 21st, 1925 in Havana, Cuba. Her father, Simon Cruz, was a railway stocker and her mother was a housewife. Her mother, Catalina Alfonso Ramos, was a housewife who took care of not only Celia and her three siblings, Dolores, Gladys, and Barbaro, but also extended family. So all in all, in the Cruz household, it was reportedly 14 children.
No.
Yeah.
No.
14 children.
Her mother needs a vacation.
Yeah, well, when is that many children, the other children help out, which...
Yeah, they do.
That's what Celia did. So according to her mother, Catalina, Celia began singing at around 9 or 10 months of age. So she began singing often in the middle of the night. One of my nieces used to do that to kind of soothe herself. And she's a great singer, my niece.
I just want to say that I used to do that too. But it did not work out for me in the same way that it worked out for Celia. Okay.
But you became, you got in those musicals, baby. You became a hand after all. So.
I hit some of those notes sometimes. Yes. Yeah. On occasion.
So, because again, there's 14 children in the house. So being one of the older children among 14, she would often sing cradle songs to put the little ones to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like her contribution to the household. Now, by the time she was a teenager, she had won many musical talent shows. Because often if you're a singer, you have a good voice, people encourage you to do this kind of thing. And it helps build kids, you know, confidence. So, but her father was not so happy about this because he, you know, they're traditional. It sounds like they were probably poor to working poor or working class people.
Right.
Basically humble background. Her father was like, also they were Catholic. So her father's like, no, you're going to become a teacher. You're going to grow up, go to college and become a teacher. Very respectable.
Get married.
Exactly. Because again, this is 1925 that she's born in. So in the 30s, he's like, no, that's what you're going to do. Now, despite also her father other objections, because again, they were Catholic, she learned Santeria songs from the neighbor. Now, Santeria is an Afro-Caribbean religion that developed in Cuba during the 19th century. It arose amid a process of say, basically, it's like a combination of the Yoruba religion of West Africa, the Roman Catholic form of Christianity, and spiritualism.
That's cool. I like that.
Some people say it's the equivalent of it. Again, this is my American explaining, is like voodoo, because people think voodoo is like not voodoo is actually and hoodoo is actually a religion. People don't realize that it's actually a religion. Yeah. And it's not just like the devil kind of thing. But so Santeria would be like a combination equivalent to that. But it's like an like, actual religion.
Right. Like if you learned about voodoo from 1980s films, then maybe you don't exactly know what it is. I am a fine example of someone who doesn't exactly know what it is because I watched movies in the 80s as a child.
Okay. Yeah. So, and again, it's not the complete equivalent, but that'll give you an idea of what we're talking about. So that is why her father, who's like a Catholic, is like, no, that devil worshiping kind of thing, that kind of thing.
Stop playing D&D. That's, you know.
Even though Catholicism, Christianity in general, has some like pagan elements to it, the body of Christ, you drink and eat bread, that's a little paganish. I'm just
this Jewish girl has zero opinion on the matter. Okay,
but you know, Christians are, if not anything, they are judgmental. So, Now in Santeria, diversity, there's like not one central kind of thing. It's not like the modern church or even Judaism is a very like structured hierarchical things. It's Santeria is not like that. So often even among practitioners, like their beliefs kind of differ, but the practitioners are even called believers. Oh. So basically she's getting in touch with her African roots because she's a Afro Latina, meaning she's black. that's what that means. And she is obviously, when you see her, you're like, oh, she just looks like a black woman. And then when she talks, when she speaks, you're like, oh, she has like a very heavy Cuban accent. And yes. She's Cuban also. So she's getting in, this is part of her like African roots mixed with, it's like what we do in America. African Americans are not African. They're American because America is a melting pot. So in America, everybody comes from some other place. So we mix it all together and come up with our own culture. So Cuban culture is a very specific one. Afro-Cuban culture is a very specific one as well. And part of the Afro-Cuban culture is the Santeria element, even though everyone may not practice it, but they know about it. So anyway, so like Santeria, the music of salsa is also a reflection of this combination. So salsa, a good way to describe salsa is that it's like jazz in America. It only exists because of the people in that time at that place. So it's a combination of the drum element from Africa, because that drum thing comes from Africa, like it does here in the United States, which is also European classical music influences, as well as Native Indian, Native American, Native Cuban. It's a mixture. It's a melting pot because Latin America is a melting pot. So that's what salsa is. But it's very fast and it's just fun. It's a fun kind of music. And it reflects this environment. So
I just have to say that I used to teach Zumba. So excuse me, I'm well versed in white ladies salsaing. Okay.
But salsa makes you want to move. And so, and salsa salsa is born out of Latin America. It's a uniquely Latin America genre of music, just like dance hall. A couple weeks ago, I covered last week actually with Patra. Salsa is the same thing with Latin America. And so growing up, it was already all around her and Cuba in general. Even then was known to the outside world as having like this like very unique flavor, music, dancing, and like amazing live performances. So, but like basically in Wikipedia, the definition of salsa is a style of Caribbean music combining elements of Cuban, Puerto Rican, and American influences. So it also has the American jazz influences as well. Just like
you guys,
dance
salsa
hall.
Is so fun. I love it's it so much. And now I really want to go salsa dancing. Okay, yeah. Go on.
Now, because most of the basic musical components predate the labeling of salsa, there have been many controversies regarding its origin. But just know it is a uniquely Caribbean / Latin American flavor kind of music. So now by the time she was a teenager, like I said, she had won many, many talent contests. And she was also influenced because she's listening to salsa all around her as well.
Right.
And then she's also singing Santeria songs. So she's getting her own voice, quote unquote, her own artistic voice. So when she enters into this music, she's bringing all of that with her. So she's winning these talent contests and, you know, but she's not sure. It's just something she's good at it. It gets her attention. I'm sure she's won, you know, a little money here and there. But it wasn't until one of her teachers told her that as an entertainer, she could earn in one day what most Cuban teachers earned in a month. That she was just like, oh, maybe there is something here. Maybe
I have a new plan. Yes.
Yeah. So, but in 1947, like a good Catholic girl, she studied music. She attended university and studied music, theory, voice, and piano at Havana's National Conservatory of Music.
Okay.
So she was also classically trained. So while she was still in school, she started singing in Havana's most popular cabaret clubs, including the famous Tropicana Club. That's big time.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it just kind of like bouncing around, being in different they call them orchestras versus like bands, and you know, just trying to find her way. But her big break came in 1950 when the lead singer for Cuba Sonora Matancera left to go back to her native Puerto Rico.
Okay.
So it left a spot in there possibly for young Celia to step into. So she auditioned and was asked to join the group, making her the group's first Black front woman.
Okay.
And her first rehearsal, she met her future boyfriend and then turned husband, Pedro Knight, who was the band's second trumpeter. Now, in December of 1950, she recorded her first songs with the group, which were a resounding success.
Okay.
So she stayed with Sonora Matancera for 15 years.
Oh, my God.
They toured around Latin America. She recorded over 188 songs with them, which included Cauca Manipau Picao. I'm not pronouncing that right.
I don't know
Mata
what that
Sangarara,
is.
Mata Sangarara, Burundanga, El Yerbero Mordena, Morderno.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She won her first gold record for Burundanga, and she made her first trip to the United States in 1957. So before that, the group would be on like Mexican television and like they'd be performing, but they would be on like television. And again, this is unusual to see a Black woman fronting like a mostly white / very light skinned Latin band.
Yeah.
So, and I saw one of her things from like the Mexican television performance. Oh my God. She comes out in like this. So imagine like a Supreme style hairstyle.
Yes.
With a long, like a Supreme style long wig glittering. Mm. I mean, a long dress. Mm-hmm. And she comes out, she's all made up and she comes out and she's dancing and she's singing and her voice is so full and so dynamic.
Yeah.
She's just amazing. And she's just, it's infectious. She's amazing when you watch her. You don't understand what she's saying, but you love what she's saying because it's amazing.
I've seen like clips of her and she is, I have no idea what she's saying, but I adore her. Like,
amazing. She's just such a dynamic, like undeniable, like it's just amazing. You feel good watching and listening to her. It's just so great. So like I said, in 1957, they came to the United States, to New York to perform. And then also during this time, like this 15-year period, she's touring, but she also became a regular at the Tropicana. So probably making more money.
Yes.
And they toured basically all over Latin America and eventually made their way into America. So now in 1959, Castro sees power at the end of the revolution.
I wondered
And she was actually in Mexico touring at the time. Okay. So when she came back to Havana, it was in turmoil, but also everything was basically shut down. So she left. It was a very vibrant, you know, musical scene, everybody out and about. And then after she came back, it was like basically shut down. And also her mother was sick with cancer.
Oh.
So she's a performer. So she needed money for medical expenses. So when she was offered a contract to perform for a few months again in Mexico City, she accepted. So she left Cuba shortly after. And again, everything was unknown.
Just her?
She was with the band.
Okay.
So she wasn't sure she'd be able to come back home because, again, everything was kind of like unsettled, like during that time. But she needed to go out and make money. So you take the risk, right? Because she can't make money if she stays there.
No. Yeah.
Sadly, after 1 week of arriving in Mexico, after a week, she received news that not her mother, but her father, Simon, had died.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How? It didn't say, but, you know. I can only imagine the stress, you know, going through a coup and that kind of stuff was going through. Yeah. So she had been now early on in her life, just side note, she had been, pro-communist and that, you know, it's for the people because communism in its pure form is like, let's, distribute resources,
help everyone out,
da, da, da. Right. But then when people get in power, they often change all of that.
It don't work because of the people in power.
The ideas are good, but it doesn't work because the people have to execute it. So, but after Castro came to power and she saw how brutal the regime was and how they just shut everything down, she became more critical. And also she's older. So, you know, you see things a little bit more, not like you make excuses, but things are not quite as clear as they are when you don't have to make a living and live in the real world.
So
you could just go to school. So because she became more critical of him publicly, they denied her being able to come back to Cuba. So they continued to tour on, and then she would send money back home when she could, and you know, that kind of thing. Now in 1961, they finally left because it was a long running engagement in Mexico. They finally left. And since they couldn't go back to Cuba, they actually went to the United States.
Okay.
Yeah. And so she knew that her criticism would not only just put her in danger, but her family. So she kind of tamped down on it, but also, you know, while still remaining critical and just, you know, she's worried about her family and her fellow countrymen. And so she eventually immigrated to the United States.
Okay.
During this time, she began performing solo without the group and performed at Hollywood Palladium here in Los Angeles and all over the country. In 1962, just determined to settle down and create some sort of life for herself, she bought a house in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Okay.
And again, she tried several times to return to Cuba to see her sick mother, but the Cuban government just always denied her request. But finally, on April 7th of 1962, she received the news that her mother, Catalina, had died as well.
Ugh,
so she was not able to go back at all. When she left that time to go out and make money, she hadn't been able to return.
That's so sad. That's tragic.
Yeah. That same year, on July 14th, she and Pedro tied the knot.
Okay.
So, Soon after that, she and the band had their first major tour outside of the Americas, visiting Europe and Japan, where she performed with fellow salsa superstar Tito Puente.
Okay.
Also, just to note, salsa is heavily, heavily male dominated, period. Especially during this time. She was the one of a few female singers even known, but so it was heavily, heavily male dominated. So, Tito Puente, we all know that name as well. And she also began in 1965 her solo career with her husband as her manager.
Okay.
Which worked out, by the way, spoiler alert. It's not like Millie's husband trying to take over. Like, by all accounts, Pedro was like an upstanding, like, guy, like, good husband, like, by all accounts, you know, who knows? Marriage is difficult, but he, you know, maybe because he comes from the same business also, like, he was a musician. And it seemed like he, again, her talent's undeniable, and hopefully he didn't resent her for being so wonderful and actually just wanted to support his wife.
It is not impossible for someone to love someone so much that they want just the absolute best for them. Let's let's like talk about that. I think let's that normalize that's fair. That. Let's that's normalize how, that. That's not
how it should be.
That's how it should be. We have all these stories of that not happening, but like that could also happen. My husband, for example, is constantly telling me, listen, go get famous. I will raise our children.
Sal just wants to be a house husband.
Desperately trying to be a house husband. I will make you dinner every night and do the dishes. Please.
And you know what? Most famous women are okay with that, honestly. Most famous and hardworking women are like, yes, that sounds amazing.
But he's a writer too. So I was like, baby, we'll get so rich that we'll get the nanny. Okay, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, he's like, no one else is raising our babies.
Yeah, of course not. No, Sal is wonderful. Right. I keep asking him if he has a twin brother.
Yeah, he's looking.
Or just a brother, and he doesn't. Nope.
Still
he just
not.
Doesn't.
Still
yeah,
no. Yeah,
sorry. they are so cute, guys. So she, again, her and Tito, the combination of their talent and their skills was very successful. So she, as a solo artist, she also began touring, continued to tour with Señor Puente. And they actually collaborated on albums and just shows in general. She, during this time with Tito and her, she became exposed to worldwide audiences over many, many continents, along with salsa being introduced to worldwide audiences and as a viable, legitimate musical genre throughout the world. Again, it's wonderful. How can you not like salsa when you hear it? It's amazing.
I think of salsa as just ubiquitous with music. And it's interesting to hear that like, oh, this is how it rose to prominence.
In the 1960s. You know. In the 1960s. So now their first collaborative album, Son Con Guanguanco. I know I did not pronounce that right.
You sound like you're speaking Japanese. I just want you to know that.
I know. It featured a recording of Jose Claro Fumero's Garacha Bemba Colada, which became one of her signature songs. The two would go on to collaborate on a total of 8 albums together.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a lot.
Now, again, when you watch her, she's electric. She's charismatic. She's just wonderful. Like, she's undeniable. She has the energy of like a Tina Turner.
Okay.
She really, but she looks like Patti LaBelle. She reminds you, and looks wise, she looks like Patti LaBelle and can sing.
I can
like
see that.
Like Patti, but she her energy, and not that Patty's not like energetic, but Miss Patti is like a vocalist first and foremost. Where with salsa, you're also dancing, so it reminds me of Tina Turner in that sense.
Yes.
Like she's very electric, just for our American audiences or even our audiences in Europe. So just imagine like someone who looks like Patti LaBelle and has the voice of Patti LaBelle and Tina Turner, but has like the energy on stage like Tina Turner. So. But it's salsa and it's in Spanish and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Now, in 1974, her collaboration with Johnny Pacheco, the label's founder and musical director of a new it's called Via Records. She sang, they had an album called Celia and Johnny, and the lead single, Kimbara, was both a commercial success. Like, it was just like one of those things that you cannot, everybody was singing. It was everywhere, it was on the record. Yeah. That same year, Fania Records, the leading salsa record label, acquired Tito and Celia. They actually signed them to an imprint Via Records, where she remained until 1992.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's
so
a long
she's
time.
In with the because they probably looked at her success with Tito Puente, and then they were like, well, that works. So let's put her with some other big wigs.
Yeah,
right. Now, with Fania, she became part of Fania All Stars, which was basically they found all of the great salsa singers, like the big ones, because they realized like this is going somewhere. It's worldwide. There's enough work for everyone. But they put them all together and they would tour around
in
performances. Can you imagine?
That's amazing. Like, that reminds me of the Johnny Cash movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? When they did that in the South, they would have like, you know,
I think it was a very common thing in music, just especially during the, in the 60s and the 70s. And it's kind of like if Motown had all their hits together, all their stars together on one bill. So this was amazing. And they toured all over. She was the only woman on the tour in this group.
What?
Only woman. Even though there's other female salsa singers, but she was so popular and undeniable. And again, she's Black. She's Afro-Latina. Yeah. And obviously Afro-Latina. She's not hiding anything. She's proud of her Afro-Latina-ness. Yeah. Like she's obviously, she's a dark-skinned woman. So is her husband. He's also a dark-skinned man. So they're obviously Black people. So this is like extraordinary in many, many ways, in a lot of ways. But again, when you watch her perform, you're like, because she's undeniable. So, now, these performances, again, exposed all of them as well as salsa to even more worldwide audiences, including in Africa.
Oh, awesome.
Her performance in Zaire was part of the Rumble in the Jungle event with Rumble in Jungle is Muhammad Ali. Is it George? Is it George Frazier or George Foreman? I can't remember.
Are
I think it's George Foreman.
Are you asking me a question about sports?
I know.
Is that?
But the Rumble in the Jungle was like, you know, Muhammad Ali. It was like a big, big, like event. And it was in Africa.
The title Rumble in the Jungle, like creating this event in Africa, calling it Rumble in the Jungle. There's nothing more American. There's nothing more American.
It is very 70s. Because right now that would not fly today.
Nope,
they would not.
Nope.
But she performed in, because they have musical performances where James Brown, all these Black performances came from, performers came from the America as well. But again, she's a Black woman coming back to Mother Africa. So it's like, let's, and again, salsa is just so undeniable. It's such great music. And so her performance is included in the film Soul Power, where you see this event. Also in the 70s, she recorded an album and began touring well into the 80s with Willie Colon. While touring with him, this is where her even more flamboyant costumes, and this is where she also reminds me of Patti LaBelle. So imagine Patti LaBelle in the 80s. Remember in the 80s where she had like the spiky hair? Remember?
Yes.
I got a new attitude.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So it's kind of like that, but it's also in the tradition of her culture. So there's also a lot of feathers. It reminds me of Carnival.
Yeah.
Like it's just very like sometimes it'd be like just various colored wigs, tight sequined dresses, very high heels. Just her fashion became as synonymous and as famous as her singing style. And her name. So some of these outfits were so extraordinary that the Smithsonian Institute acquired some of them.
Wow. That's cool.
So just amazing. Like she's just an amazing. Yeah. At this point in her career, she's a household name worldwide. She didn't slow down through. And again, remember, she's living in the States also. So now we are becoming more aware of her because in proximity wise, but also salsa music in general. And then we have a large Latino population in the States.
Yes.
We've always had a large, you know, for hundreds of years at this point. So salsa is really coming to the forefront. Now throughout the 80s, she continued to record and tour. She also received her first tribute career, a concert at Madison Square Garden in 1987.
No, wow.
Yeah. Finally, in the 1990s, so she's having all this success, but, you know, personal heartache because she wasn't able to see her parents or her family back in Cuba. Yeah. But finally, in the 90s, she was able to return to Cuba, where she was invited to make a presentation at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base.
Oh, wow.
When she came out of the presentation, she took a few grams of Cuban soil and put it in her bag. And at her request, she wanted the bag to be placed in her coffin when she died because she wasn't sure she was going to be able to move back to her hometown, to her home country. Now, again, she is a bona fide household name, huge worldwide success. In 94, she received the National Endowment for the Arts Award from President Bill Clinton.
Excellent.
In the 90s, she also began appearing in TV and film, including Mambo Kings, along Armand Asante and Antonio Banderas.
Okay.
She was in the Perez family film with Alfred Molina and Angelica Houston. In 1999, she performed with Pavarotti for the Pavarotti and Friends concert.
Oh, wow. I would love to see that.
go on YouTube. It's all there. In the 90s. And the great thing about Miss Celia Cruz is that she also grew with the times. Like, she knew you have to be hip. She always innovated with the times. And then young people also adore her. Because again, if you are a performer and you see her, you're a musician, you're like, she's undeniable. I want to be there. In the 90s, Wyclef Jean of the Fugees fame, we made her famous. Guantanamero. I know I'm butchering that, but it's like one of her famous hits. Also, just a side note, one of her catchphrases was azúcar, meaning sugar. Azúcar. It's terrible Spanish. But she's just so...
I could listen to your Japanese Spanish all day. Okay.
It's so funny because in high school, that's what I studied.
It's got its own flavor. It's
azúcar. I'm from Florida. My Spanish should be much better than it is.
So much better.
Azúcar. Anyway, but it means sugar. And so she would, that's her catchphrase, right? Which is just so amazing. She's just so amazing. So Wyclef Jean remade one of her famous songs, which she loved. She appeared in the music video and she embraced the young people and she wholeheartedly embraced the remake. Just a cool, cool lady. In 2000, she released a new album under the auspices of Sony, because now she's with Sony. Celia Cruz and Friends, A Night of Salsa, where she recorded with Tito Puente, who died shortly after. Unfortunately, her long-term friend, lifelong friend at this point. Thanks to that album, she won her first Latin Grammy. So she's an older lady now. She's an older lady of a certain age now. And she's winning Grammys, okay? In 2001, she won her second Grammy.
Wow.
That same year, she performed along with Mark Anthony, who's also another salsa singer who we love, Mark Anthony. Oh, I love his voice. In a tribute to the Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. So the Queen of Salsa is singing a song with Mark Anthony to the Queen of Soul for VH1. I love it. And that's the thing I will say about Black Americans. We love when we see Black people from other parts of the world. We love, love, love that. So when we got exposed, I'm sure, to Celia Cruz in the 60s, we were like, what is this beautiful thing that I'm listening to and watching? So it's just amazing that, because Aretha Franklin was not an easy person to please. So the fact that she agreed to have Celia Cruz sing in her tribute, it says a lot, because the Queen of Soul was not having it. She did not suffer fools gladly. So, So it's, but I just imagine, like, they were probably like, oh my God, what is this? It sounds so good. Anyway, so in November 2002, unfortunately, she fell during a concert in Mexico. She was diagnosed with an aggressive form of brain cancer and underwent surgery the following month. She was still confident that she was going to recover. She's like, I didn't shed a tear. And she finished recording her last album, Regala del Alma. In the following year, in February 2003, so about 2 months after her surgery, she appeared in public at the 45th Annual Grammy Awards to receive another award for the Best Salsa Album. In March of that year, the U.S. Hispanic Telemundo paid tribute to her. And it was called Celia Cruz Azúcar.
Yes.
So I love it. And it involved Gloria Estefan, Mark Anthony, La India, Gloria Gaynor, and Patti LaBelle, among others, who paid their tribute to the Queen of Salsa, the Queen herself. This was her last public appearance, because unfortunately on July 16th, so that was about 5 months later, the great Celia Cruz died at her home in Fort Lee, New Jersey, at the age of 77. At her request, her remains were transferred to Miami, which has a large Cuban exile population, for 2 days to receive homage of the Cuban exile admirers who loved her. And they finally returned and rested in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx in New York. Now, reportedly, over 200,000 people came to pay their respects to the great Celia Cruz.
That gives me the chills.
Yeah. Now, the soil, remember the soil that she got during her visit? That was laid to rest in her tomb as well.
Good, good.
Over the course of her career, she had many, many achievements. I only scratched the surface of it, but some of them includes 23 gold albums.
Yes.
She has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes, she does.
And she, along with the another Afro-Cuban musician, Cacao, were inducted into the Billboard Latin Music Hall of Fame, the International Latin Music Hall of Fame, and she was presented with the ASCAP Latin Heritage Award, becoming the first recipient of the accolade.
Wow.
After her death in December of 2005, the musical Azúcar would open to honor her, and it had a world tour.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it highlights important moments in her life and her career. It also had an exhibit that traveled along with it that included photographs, personal documents, costumes, videos, and music. As you can imagine, many schools and streets have been named in her honor, including a music school that opened in the Bronx named the Celia Cruz Bronx High School of Music.
Yay.
As well as there's a monument in Miami, in the Hialeah area of Miami, in Heritage Park. In 2023, last year, Rolling Stones ranked her as number 18 on their list of 200 greatest singers of all time.
Nice.
That's questionable. She probably should be higher up, but okay, something she's like, on the list.
I'll give her 6 or 7.
Yeah,
you don't have to make her number one, but
yeah,
I agree.
Now, in February also of last year, she was selected as an honoree in the 2024 American Women Quarter Program. So basically, there's I think it's like 4 or 5 women that are going to be Latinas that who are going to be appear on the U.S. quarter.
Yeah,
she is the only Afro Latina. She's the first Afro Latina to appear, and they may be circulating already, but look for those. Maybe save one for the great Celia Cruz. Now,
like I will.
In closing, I don't want to underestimate her cultural significance and contribution to the world. One critic said that Celia Cruz is her, and probably one could argue Tito Puente as well, but definitely, as the only woman of such high profile, she brought salsa into the mainstream. It's because of Celia Cruz. Because salsa was more of a regional thing. It was known as something that's, well, maybe people here, and if you went to Cuba or Puerto Rico, like you would hear it. But with her success, her being an ambassador for salsa music, for Latin people, for Cuban people, for Afro-Cuban people, it really made a difference. And one of the videos I watched in my research, Christina Milian, you know Christina Milian? She's a singer, an actress. She's Afro-Cuban. She's Afro-Cuban. Gina Torres is also Afro-Cuban. And before that,
Gina Torres.
Gina Torres was married to Lawrence Fishburne at one time, and she's been in The Matrix. She was in the Suits is the big thing that, Suits. Suits was a big thing that she was in on television, but I love me some Gina Torres. Like, that is my girl. She was in Hercules and Xena Warrior Princess. That's kind of like when she came on, like, but when you see her, you're like, oh, I know who that is. But before them, people were like, but you're Black, but you speak Spanish. Like, they in America were just very confused about that. So Celia Cruz is really, because representation does matter. So because of Celia Cruz, people are like, oh, now I understand what Afro-Latino means, or Afro-Latina means. Like, I get that. But she specifically with salsa, she brought that to the forefront and made it the mainstream music genre that it is. So one cannot overstate her influence in salsa or in music in general and as a whole. So the great Celia Cruz is the queen of salsa and the queen of our hearts over here at Notorious Women.
She really is. I really wish that we had more money and we could start playing her music right now.
Azúcar.
Azúcar.
Yeah.
I mean, my accent is also awesome. Thank you so much for her. She's incredible.
So much fun.
I feel like we need like a Notorious Women soundtrack. You know what I'm saying? Like I would listen to it so much.
Yes.
Like it would be And then it would be like Taylor Swift.
And you know, and also I will say
it would
this.
Be the greatest combination
like
of music ever.
Millie Jackson, Left Eye, like TLC. I will say for a couple of years now, I was like, I want to start taking salsa classes, but I was like, I don't know. Like, is but now knowing that Black people have such a big presence, you know, in the form of Miss Celia Cruz, now I feel a lot more comfortable because at first I don't want to be like one of those people appropriating. I'm not Latin, obviously, but like just appreciating it. But it's also like, you know, when you listen to it, you can't help but dance. And I'm like, I need to get into them salsa classes.
Listen, first of all, I taught Zumba for quite a while. Okay. It was one of those things where my kids were at the YMCA and I was like a crazy person free because my children were in child care, right? And so I was like, I'm good at Zumba. And then they were like, okay, well, we need people to teach at this YMCA and you are crazy. So if you could get certified, we will hire you. And that is what happened. And then I became this Zumba teacher that nobody trusted because why is this white girl standing in front of me pretending that she knows what salsa is? But I faked it. Like I faked it. Because I love it. It's so
and
good.
Miriam, like, we're going to remind our listeners, you have the equipment. You got the badonkadonk to make it look authentic. So,
okay, I'm going to tell you a real quick story. When I was nursing my children, okay, the first thing that happens, biology, when you're nursing, and every woman is different, and some women gain weight when they nurse, and some women lose weight, and some women don't move their weights. I happen to have the biology wherein not only did I lose weight, but I lost it from my bootay. My bootay disappeared. I remember, and my husband was like, no, come back. But I was in a Zumba class, one of the Zumba classes that inspired them to be like, oh, she's crazy. And I was doing a little butt shake and I was looking in the mirror and I remember thinking like, this is stupid.
It only looks stupid when you don't have the booty.
Because I didn't have it. It went away. Yeah. I was like, what? What are you, my hip bone? What is this?
Yeah.
Is my hip bone attractive? I don't know.
It's so funny. I will say as a fellow badonkadonk where when you lose so much weight that you start to lose your butt, you get freaked out. You're like, what is going on? Like, am I sick?
That was not the plan. Like, like, what's wrong? Doctor?
Like, I want my booty back.
Like, people aren't attracted to me anymore. I'm not attracted to me anymore. What's going on?
Well, I guess you just kind of get used to your body the way it is. And then when it changes, you know?
Do you know who appreciated it the most? My fellow white women.
Yeah.
They were like, you look so good.
Yeah, I know. It's that's something to say when you get complimented. All depends on who it comes from, right?
Yeah.
It's how you take it. So you're just like, okay. So who's your notorious woman this week?
My notorious woman. Okay, so I am following the thread. We're really taking this month very seriously. We don't take every month very seriously, but for some reason you and I both went, June, let's do this. So for Pride Month,
yay,
our last Pride Month lady is a fascinating woman. She showed up on my the internet knows what I'm looking for and it just popped up in a search. Of nothing. I wasn't even looking for anything. And Google was like, girl, I know who you're looking for. Ruth Ellis. Now, here's the thing. There is another Ruth Ellis out there, but she is the activist Ruth Ellis. Okay?
Okay.
There's a whole nother Ruth Ellis. Not her. This is the activist Ruth Ellis.
Okay. This sounds very familiar, but tell me.
I hope she does. Okay. So let's start with her life story. Here we go. She was born in Springfield, Illinois. Which is the Springfield I imagine when I watch The Simpsons, but that is not the point at all. I just wanted to share that. Thank you. On July 23rd, 1899. Now, she was the youngest of four children. So she had three brothers. She was the only girl. So Charles, Harry, and Wellington. Her mother was Carrie Farrow Ellis, and her father was Charles Ellis Sr. I read that her parents were former slaves, and I have no reason to not believe it. It was just like one source, but none of the other sources said that, but that sounds right. Okay.
Yeah.
Her mom died when she was a teen, and her father, her father was the first African American mail carrier in Illinois. So,
Okay.
Now, I don't really know exactly like when her mom died, like in terms of her teen years, but like in 1915, so she's like 16-ish, 15, 16-ish, she came out of the closet. She told everyone she was a lesbian. Really? And her family was completely accepting.
Well, if they survived slavery, they're like, okay.
Whatever. That's fine.
Really? Really? Okay.
Right? Long as you're alive and eating every day and have freedom, you know?
I feel like queerness is one of those things that back during that time, people were like, okay, that makes sense. It wasn't until we went to like... It's like we had the Puritans. They're like, no, wear anything other than a dress. And then we had like this sort of like people like, oh, there's all kinds of people. Like, and then in ancient time, people were like, yeah, there's all kinds of people. Yeah, and then the Puritans became like, nah. So it just goes back and forth. But I feel like I'm not that surprised at that, actually.
I feel like we need more stories about this. It's kind of like like the Celia Cruz's husband, who was just like, no, I'm going to manage you because I love you so much and you're so talented and I'm going to make sure you get everything. Like, let's normalize also, that. Let's
all normalize. The money coming in this one house. Okay. So,
you know like, what I'm saying? He's like, keep going, my beautiful lady.
If he's a smart man, he's like, it's all coming in one place. Mm-hmm, so let's do this.
Let's go on a European vacation for funsies because we can't, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm, my beautiful lady.
Smart man. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Very smart. So, and she actually, like I said, she came out of the closet, but she actually said she never came out, which I love.
She's just always,
She's just like, that girl's cute. I like her in asexual way.
I feel like your family members, because we know sexuality is not, sex is part of it. But when you're a child, like straight children, like don't know anything about sex. Like, you know what I mean? They're just children.
Exactly.
Like,
they're just kids.
So, but I feel like the elders can see it before you can, before you realize 100%. It, if they're paying attention.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah. Like exactly. And so it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she graduated from Springfield High School in 1919. At this time, fewer than 7% of African Americans graduated from a secondary school, which is crazy.
Well, that's on purpose.
Well, it's crazy that it was normal. Yeah. Right. It's crazy that we're assholes in this country. That's what
because
crazy.
Emancipation, black people started all these schools. That's why we have HBCUs, right? So they're like, and then black men are becoming congressmen and like they're like want to contribute to America. And then with the compromise of 1900.
Yep. 1900 fucked
then
it all up.
Jim Crow came into effect. And that's what Jim Crow wanted to do. It's like, keep them dumb so they can stay in the field and we can have slavery light, which is sharecropping.
Yep. Yeah. And that's like 1915, 1919. Yep. Those are like prime. This is when you had to drop out of school so you could help out, make money. Like you had to, you had no choice. So she was very lucky. She was very lucky. Her father was able to continue to be a mail carrier.
Yeah. That helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, most families, if you could let your kid get educated, you would.
Yeah. Most parents would do that. But it's like, if you need an extra body in the field, that's what they got to do.
That's what it is. Right.
Yep.
So in the 1920s, she met, her name is Cecilene Franklin. They called her Cecilene Babe Franklin. And she became the love of her life, essentially. They moved in together. And then in 1937, they moved to Detroit. So she worked for a printing company before this. And then she moved to Detroit for a babysitting job to make more money. Now, more money for her, for a black woman in America in 1937 was $7 an hour. And you know how I never look it up? I looked it up. That's $152.67 a week now.
Wow.
That was more money.
You'd think it'd be the opposite, that she'd make more at the printing place.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
No. But because she had this printing press like knowledge and like skills, she managed to get a job in Detroit at Waterfield and Heath, where she worked until she opened her own press out of the West Side home she shared with Cecilene.
Ooh, okay. I love this.
So her printing business, it was called the Ellis and Franklin Printing Company, was the first woman-owned printing shop in the state of Michigan.
Wow.
Okay. Now let's talk about what she did for fun, because I love that subject. She danced and she went bowling. She loved painting. She played piano. She was into photography. Okay, so she was very artistic. And I think it's, you're like, why are you telling me this? Because it's important to show that humans have humanity under every circumstance all the time. And we were talking about this earlier, like Black female joy, like
it's triggering to a lot of people.
Yeah. So I want to trigger people.
How dare she be happy?
Right. And she did. Yeah. She had so much joy. And she was a Black gay woman in the 30s. Now, their house was known in the African-American community as, quote, the gay spot. And like Wikipedia is like, I don't know if that's real, but Wikipedia can bite me. It's real. I believe it.
Yeah, that sounds like something people would say word of mouth.
Yeah, it was probably word of mouth. It was definitely a refuge. It was the central location for lesbian and gay parties, but it also served as a refuge for African-American gays and lesbians. And she continued to support anyone who came to her with books, food. She helped send kids to college. She paid for that. And she spent her life being an advocate of gay rights, and especially for African-Americans. So soon after her 70th birthday, because she was famous at this point, she would become a staple at the Michigan Women's Music Festival. Women for this festival is spelled W-O-M-Y-N.
Okay, yeah.
At that age of 70 is the year Stonewall happened. And then when that happened, she began giving speeches in support of gay and lesbian rights all across the country. Right? At 70, when you're probably tired. She's also, like, I'm not tired.
It's so funny because she had to become an entrepreneur, right? So probably to skirt discrimination at work and, you know, and keep her from living her life out loud. But also she was at that age, she was old enough to like, she comes from a family who's just like, okay, you're gay. It's not a big deal. To then growing up and going into the workforce where you probably encounter it a little bit more. But because I feel like I was saying with that pendulum about like acceptance and like retreating.
Yes.
After the wars, especially after World War II, it became all about like the men are back home now. Let's go back to quote unquote traditional stuff. Right.
Yeah.
So then the conservatism comes in, social conservatism, and then it pushed gay people back into the closet. Whereas maybe they were a little bit more out, and rightfully so. And then there's also McCarthyism,
which
was also used to root out quote unquote undesirables under the pretense that they're communists and enemies of the American government. So she's living through all of that. And then Stonewall happens when she's in her 70s. So she's lived through like,
oh, we can talk about it again. Let's go.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, though, because in the 40s, like you could be arrested for being gay.
Yes.
So it was one of those things where it's like it socially, it's like not a big deal. But if they want to target you, they can. And you go to jail because you're gay. Like people don't realize, like, I want it the traditional way. You want the traditional way of your gay son going to jail because of who he is. Right. Like, go to hell.
But
is what I have to say about that.
It's in people's heads. People can turn you gay. Didn't you know that?
Forgot. I know.
You know that?
Well, it's because I saw a rainbow the other day. Now I'm gay. That's what happens, right?
If that was possible, I would have become a lesbian a long time ago. Because it's rough out here in these streets if you're attracted to straight men. It's rough. As my girlfriend said, my girlfriend Yvette said, I was like, you got to get back there out in the pool. She's like, no, there's pee in the pool, Lavetta. It's too much pee in the pool.
Oh, God, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's sanitized. Yeah. Okay. When you have tiny babies, you learn that pee is sanitary or sanitized or something like that. Because you get peed on all the time and you have to You have to mentally
process. You have to tell yourself that, like,
to be like, it's fine as you like try to burn your hands off when you wash them. That, yeah, like, it's really, it's fine.
Especially right, not some strange man's pee that you just met up at the Cheesecake Factory at. You're like, dude, I told her, I was like, I'm going to steal that, but I'll give you credit. But then she's like, it's too much pee in the pool, Lavetta. Yeah. I got to go back inside. So, right. Yeah.
So, on her 100th birthday, yes, girl, she led and was sung Happy Birthday to You by the San Francisco's Dyke March of 1999. Now, she and Cecilyn eventually did separate. Okay. They were together for more than 30 years.
Wow.
And then they separated like 4 years later. Cecilyn died of a heart attack.
R.I.P.
Now, Ellis, Ruth Ellis, the activist,
mm-hmm,
had some heart problems, but wanted to spend her last days at home. So she died in her sleep in the early morning hours of October 5th, 2000. Her ashes were spread in the next year's Women's Festival and into the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean off of Ghana.
Aww.
Now, there is a place called the Ruth Ellis Center, which honors her life and her work and is one of only four agencies in the United States dedicated to homeless LGBT youth and young adults. They are a drop-in center, the supportive housing programs, and an integrated health and wellness center that provides medical and mental health care. It's still thriving. It operates five main programs, including youth programs, health equity and outreach, formerly drop-in, Center for Lesbian, Queer Women and Girls, supportive housing, community-based family support services. She knew about this program. It was created by other people in her name.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about it because it's still there. And if anyone listening who might need some support,
yes,
again, it's the name of the center is the title of this podcast, Ruth Ellis. Again, activist. So if you Google her and you're like, what? Activist. A community of activists, including John Allen, Kofi Adoma, and Courtney Wilson, founded the center in 1999, the same year she was celebrating her 100th birthday. In September 2000, she was 101. Right before her death, she attended the grand opening of the center's first phase, which was a drop-in center for at-risk youth. In 2009, she was inducted into the Michigan Hall of Fame. And in 2013, she was inducted to the Legacy Walk, which is an outdoor display, public display, which celebrates LGBT history and people. She's also the oldest contributor to, quote, Peace of My, it's an anthology called Peace of My Heart, a Lesbian of Color anthology. And that
love
is Ruth Ellis.
Love, love, love that. I just love that. I love it when women can be whoever they want to be in the world.
I think, you know, that it's interesting to note, and I've seen a theme where women who identify as some sort of queer, as, you know, who are some sort of minority, they are born into this world with a few steps behind, right? In terms of, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, how far
society
behind of,
yeah,
cisgendered white men are you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when they are supported at home, when their, yeah, first, when the first line of defense is there to protect them under every circumstance, they tend to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to not be our mass murdering women.
Yeah.
They tend to be the ones.
Listen, don't be knocking a murderess in my presence.
I apologize.
I mean, I sometimes motherfuckers got to be killed. I'm just saying.
You.
But you know.
I was disrespectful to you. I understand.
But if they had more opportunities, they probably, right, wouldn't be killing so much. I'm just, right,
when,
you know.
Like, because think about it. In 1915, she's like, I'm gay. And her family is like, great. Okay. I'm a black woman who's great. That's fine. Yeah. So she found her way and she knew her worth. So yeah. She was able to be like, you know what? I'm going to start my own printing press because y'all are assholes. Right? Now, not everyone can do that. I know there's different circumstances, but like you have a much better shot if you're there for your kid, you know?
You know that, you know, our title is Notorious Women and excuse me, I don't know what's going on with us too, but our title is Notorious Women and we say, you know, heroic or horrific, right? And most people will think, oh, it's only true crime. It's only murder. And again, I love a murderess. But also what makes a woman notorious is that she has the audacity to try and become happy and live her life on her own terms. That also makes her notorious. And that is why we can cover somebody like Celia Cruz, who went on to great, enormous success worldwide, world renowned from humble beginnings in Cuba. To someone like Ruth Ellis, who is an American woman who may not be world renowned, maybe at this point she is, but she had so much of a positive influence on so many in her community, those who came in contact with her. And now we have this legacy of the center in her honor and in her name that continues the work. But the fact that, like you said, she had the audacity to be like, I'm going to start my own printing press so I can live my life out loud, so I can be with my woman. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while living in the realities of a homophobic society, but like the fact that they had the guts or even like the desire and then the guts to be like, well, I'm just go for it. That also makes them notorious in this world, which is, I mean, that's why we love our show and that's why we came up with the show.
Yeah.
But like, that is also true. The fact that is why you can be heroic. Somebody like Coretta Scott King is also notorious because how dare she tries to like keep on the leg, but not only be like help her husband, like be like, well, you need to read this book, you need to read that book, but also go and get her education and then have the nerve to go and speak in world stages about, you know, nonviolence or like queer rights or like whatever. How dare she not just be home in the kitchen? Like behind the doors and shutting up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I just love that about our podcast. And I love this about these two women. Thank you so much for sharing Ruth with us. Like, and guys, anybody listening, if they have like some personal stories attached to both Ruth and Celia Cruz, let us know. Write in.
Again, tell us your stories and we'll read it.
We'll read
on
them.
Our next episode.
Again, remember to follow us on all the things, you know, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, wherever your podcast catcher is. And leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store because that is a worldwide thing and it helps people find us. Apparently, we have listeners in Asia, which I love.
Yes,
and they probably found us in the Apple Store. So, but all over the world. But and just keep supporting us. We love you guys. And Miriam, also Patreon. If you want to send us some cash, you can do that. You can contribute to the show for as little as $2 a month. I think you can also do $5 and $10 a month. You can also do a one-time donation of $5, $10, $50, $100, $100,000, whatever you want to do. We will take
There's
it.
No
we will
pay limit. Our
There's no limit. We'll pay our taxes. Don't worry.
We will.
But you can do that at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support and also find the show?
So come to us on our Instagram. It's fun out there. It's a journey, which is Notorious Women Podcast. Notorious Women Podcast for our TikTok, Notorious Women Podcast for our YouTube channel, where you can listen to episodes if you want to. And then you can email us. If you have longer things to tell us, send us to our Gmail, which is notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you again for joining us and hope you have a wonderful rest of your June and Azuka. Yeah, that's terrible.
That was so good, though.
I'm sorry. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.